I appreciate all the folks that have tuned in today to listen to this discussion. If you should have a question or a concern, please use the chat box and we'll try to address it the best way that we can. So first we will review the agenda. Is there any changes or is the agenda acceptable as presented?
Madam Chair, if I may, I believe that of the three items on the agenda, the community first item, which is the third item, the first item under new business, is pretty short and almost procedural. And I would suggest the commission or the chair consider moving that to the first item and just get it out of the way.
Okay, any objection by the commissioners?
No. We have several people that haven't muted their, muted themselves. How about that? Make those reminders. And Phyllis, you are muted.
Not now. Nope, I got my little space bar that once in a while I hit it right and unmutes me. But yes, we please have everyone, if they're not, if they're just listening, please mute so that background noise is minimized and we can carry on a clear discussion. Any other revisions to the agenda? Call for a motion to approve as revised.
So much.
Second. Okay, all in favor of revised agenda, vote aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, then we will go on with the new business of community first. George?
Sure. So this has to do with our requirements as a public hospital district, and I'll ask Mary Murphy to talk. She did the research on this, and thank you for doing that, Mary, and you can give the exact detail.
Sure. Thank you. So when we started the Community First program, one of the stipulations of that program is that it be for public health use only, since we're working with so many businesses offering a free service. We are permitted to do that under the current emergency plans of Washington State. I did get an advice from Municipal Research and Services attorney Oscar Ray regarding this. And what he advised was that the board set a policy that the free mental health services, behavioral health services in the community are for public health purposes only. And that gives us the permission basically to continue providing those services. So that's what I brought to George's attention, and that's why we have this policy before us to do. I'll wait for discussion before making a motion. Is there any discussion from board members? Questions?
So what is this only good while we are under the governor's emergency proclamation orders then, or does it continue past that?
Well, it could potentially, but I think we have to be very careful about that. And second, I can look for Oscar's advisory regarding that so that you can get the exact wording on it. But it looked like we met several conditions to go ahead and do that.
So do we have to have a written policy regarding that, Mary?
Well, yeah. Yes, we really do have to have the board set the policy for this.
So we can do it verbally?
Yes, we can do, yes. It'll be in the record, Phyllis, if we vote today to set that policy. It's an approval for that program to exist for public health purposes.
Okay.
It's fairly simple adjustment, but important in terms of our legal standing.
So we basically just have to have a motion from the commissioners approving this program that's being enacted in the community.
Correct. Yeah, and the board really should be approving programs that are offered in the community. Public health districts are authorized to provide other healthcare services. This falls under that. My concern was about gifting public funds or public resources, which we are prohibited from doing. But Oscar said, you know, since we're in an emergency, the Attorney General's office provided guidance on the emergency impact, the gift of public funds issue. And if we're expended, you know, for that purpose, then it qualifies. So we're fine with that. And it's a fundamental purpose of a public health hospital district as well. So the question was whether mental health services can be provided at no cost to business employees. And that's where the question arose. And the Attorney General's office guidance notes that supporting small businesses during the pandemic is permissible to protect the health of the regional economy. However, the guidance is more applicable to general purpose entities, cities and counties, rather than special purpose districts like us. So the public here says the public hospital would need to justify mental health expenditures for public health purposes and not economic reasons. So any policy adopted by the district should include recitals stating its reasons for offering mental health services at no charge.
Okay, then I'll entertain a motion for adoption of the first Community First program. And Mary, would you print that off so that becomes part of our record, substantiate our policy?
Well, George has a copy of this, so it's public information, but certainly Kylie can add that if that's what you wish. Is that what you're asking? Okay.
Yeah, I would like to have that as backup documentation as to the motion.
Okay. Okay. So, but I think the motion just needs to state that the Community First program provided by Lakeshland Community Hospital is intended for public health purposes.
Mary, why don't you make the motion and use the correct language?
I'm making a motion now that the Lakeshland Community Hospital District will offer the Community First program to the community for public health purposes.
I'll second that.
Okay, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carried.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for that discussion. Now we'll move on to old business. And the first one on the agenda, you took off the agenda, is it the clinic?
Sanctuary.
Okay. Go ahead, George, lead us in that discussion.
Sure. So on your screen, you should see the slide as we discussed it last week, the end of last week. And we actually reviewed these to ensure so the administration knew what we were supposed to do. So we did these two things, and let me talk about them. So interestingly, in discussions with the leadership members at CVCH, they in the future plan something similar, although an outpatient service that would continue the type of service, a similar service in our community. And there might be a need for folks that currently are in our sanctuary staff in the new program over there. No guarantees, but what we have is an opportunity to continue that service or see that service continued by CVCH. I'll pause if there's questions on that.
They're not talking about doing the service we now provide. They're talking about doing outpatient counseling. Is that correct?
As I understand it, outpatient addiction services.
Yeah.
So, yep. And, you know, that's what we're seeing happening in the world is the inpatient services are just not being paid for by insurance companies. And like all things, they're moving towards an outpatient model.
George, I was under the impression that their program is for mental health counseling and not addiction.
So this is a new program that's coming.
George, I'm on the line. It's Carrie Ferguson. I am at home with my toddler, so if they're screaming, it's him. So Mary, what we're looking at, we've already started down in Wenatchee something called New Path, which is intensive outpatient programming for addiction. So we would, in our new facility, when we have a little bit more space, we are looking at expanding that potentially up to Chelan.
So as a reminder from the data we presented, only 10% of our sanctuary population that comes is from our area, and relative to the board's question of wanting to create a future plan of delivery that services our community, that we thought this was a really great option to service our community. Relative to Jody's comments that she made, under new licensing requirements and outpatient review new certification requirements, none of those were actually new certification things, nor did they apply to a facility level. They were items related to a change of title for chemical dependency counseling to substance use disorder professionals. They were also a new certification license add-on that the individuals who work in addiction recovery can have added to their individual license. And then the other licensing issue is that insurances cannot require pre-authorization for these services. So none of these were actually new licensing requirements, and so didn't factor into the discussion relative to what we put before the board.
Okay, so I'll continue on to the second bullet. And that was to take a look at if sanctuary services were not going to be provided out of the new building, what are the cost implications? We talked with Dick, our owner's rep. He got the design and delivery team together, and they looked at just everything from removing that wing to partially shelling it out, having the skin, the envelope there, not using it. And there's a potential impact, obviously, from zero to over $3 million to the project. So it's substantial.
George, was there any clarification on the question we asked about tracking down where that $5 million deficit came from on the building project?
We are working on that. And I hope within the next week to have a detailed budget of the project in your hands.
Okay, thank you.
So that was the information we had requested from administration or regarding sanctuary.
This is Jamie again. I just want to remind the board also, if you have specific questions relative to the financials for sanctuary or new hospital questions, that Eric Volk from Wifley and Dick Bratton are on the line as well to answer questions if you guys have specific things you wanted to ask them.
Now, I'm just going to express my concern right now, and I'm sure nobody's in an agreement with it. But it appears to me that we're throwing up our hands and just throwing in the towel and saying, this is what we got to do. This is what we got to do, instead of digging in and finding out just exactly what we can do to maintain the services that we've had in the past. You know, cutting isn't always the answer. It's going forward, figuring out where the holes are and figuring how to fill them. But I still think we need to provide the quality services that we've had in the past, and figure out where in the world have we gone wrong, make those corrections and move forward. We talk about losing our percentage of patients in this area. Well, of course we're going to if we don't figure out how to provide the services. And as far as the sanctuary goes, nobody from this area will really go to that sanctuary, because when you have an addiction problem, you don't go locally. So how can we come up and create an environment that is going to serve our community and then also be profitable? There's got to be a way. I just don't want to give up.
This is Jamie. Can I add a comment? Sorry, Jordana.
Go ahead.
So it's relative to your comment, and I'm definitely not disagreeing with your passion about the sanctuary. I agree with you. Relative to that, though, what I want to add is I don't believe, relative to the financials for sanctuary, that this is a operational issue or something that we've not managed well. This is purely based on cost reimbursement, what we get for the services, what we charge for the services, and the dilution of what we could be providing if we weren't doing sanctuary services. And relative to COVID as well, which I know is the short-term issue in the minds of the board, but I just want to make it clear that I don't believe that sanctuary has been mismanaged and that's led to having some financial difficulties with them. That is not my impression at all.
May I speak, Madam Chair, to your concern? This is Mary.
Go ahead.
I understand your concern. I also have concerns about losing services. I think it's very clear that we're hearing that the reimbursement issue is something that's going to continue. It's not going to stop. And it's also something that we do not have control over. So this is not about internal management decisions and so forth. It's about reimbursement. And again, we can't control that. All we can do is try to adapt to it and not have it hurt the financial foundation of the hospital district so that we're prevented from providing other services. And correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, okay, I wish we would use our little hand things because that's helpful to me, but both Jamie and Mary have expressed quite eloquently what I was going to say, is that this isn't really about whether or not we can provide the service. It's about the fact that our community itself doesn't use it, or very few do. You've stated that they won't. I mean, I think that's a reasonable assumption, but our directive is to, for the health of this community. And it is very clear that if primarily those are Medicare patients, we are not going to get full reimbursement. So it doesn't have the chance to operate at a profit. So when we talk about, you know, plugging the holes, as Jamie said, it's not an operational issue. It's the fact that we don't control how we get reimbursed for it, and we can't make money at it. So moving to a different type of service, I think in the future, is a much better idea. And that affects what we build today with the hospital. So I guess I'm just reiterating what Jamie and Mary have both just said.
Okay. Fred, your response?
Let me unmute there. Okay. Yeah, it's in the past, 15 years ago and stuff, it was based on all the accounting and everything, a profitable operation, which subsidized the rest of our operations. That does not appear to be the case anymore. It appears to be a cash drain. And you can't have very many of those and still operate for the benefit of the community. So I agree, to me, at best, it's on the bubble, but probably not even that good.
Okay, Mary Signorelli.
Yes, along those same lines with Fred, in the past, when this program started out, it was not dependent solely on Medicaid and Medicare patients. There was full pay and commercial, either private or commercial pay, and that's what made it profitable. The difference, I think, is we no longer do the kind of promotions or marketing that we did back then when it first started out. And we started to accept more and more. It turned into a Medicare, Medicaid clientele. And I think that is the major difference in our funding and how we, in the way it's, you know, it's not carrying its own weight. I don't think we, when we, if we were to, I mean, we've got, we can't start the program apparently for another 12 months. The expectation is 12 months, it's going to be out again. I think during that time, we plan not, you know, if we move not to have sanctuary, we set up some kind of study to look into what we can do as a district to address the needs of that service that we're eliminating. That would be my, because I hate to see us lose the services that we're providing in that program.
I just want to make that one add, though, Mary. I mean, it has changed how we bill it, but the problem is that private pay won't cover a 30-day inpatient program, so we don't ever have the chance to get that back again without changing what we do. So if private pay will only pay for outpatient treatment, then we'll never be able to service the Medicare patients and do it profitably.
And all I'm saying is that we, during the interim, we look into what are some other options for providing those services.
Yeah. Jamie has her hand up again. Jamie?
Is it my turn? I'm making sure. And then I have to remember to unraise my hand, so I'm not good at that part as well. I want to be clear relative to if this is something that I move forward with the exploration of how we provide services closely like sanctuary in the meantime of COVID, likely having us not have admissions relative to sanctuary with COVID admissions and all those things is the question how we best serve our community, or is the question the board is asking me is how we best provide addiction recovery services in the community? Because they're two separate things relative to the points you guys are making as far as outpatient, inpatient, what's best reimbursable and what's best for the hospital. So I just wanted a little clarification, assuming that I might have to be the one acting on your decision if that's where we go. Thank you.
Well, I'll throw in for me that it would be what is best for our community? What is our community's needs and how can we best service them? If in fact it's the hospital that can provide, that can provide that service, because that becomes an issue as well, is whether it really even should be done at the hospital level or what portion of it. So.
Okay. Any other discussion? George?
Yes, ma'am. So I think we were looking for guidance. Administration's looking for guidance from the commission on should we continue sanctuary? Should we discontinue sanctuary? Sanctuary has two impacts on our organization. One, potential. Which we shared with you through an evaluation done by our auditors at Whipley. The second impact is on the space in the new facility. The space of the new facility has a tight timeline. And that timeline, I had Dick go and coordinate that again. He had described it last week. But really, if we were going to restart the project, when we restart the project, we would have to have any changes, such as if we were going to alter the space currently designed for sanctuary by August. And by the mid part of August, we'd have to confirm that with the design team, literally 2.5 weeks from now. So tight timeline. We haven't got, so if we want to take a look at this opportunity, if this is an opportunity, we have to make a decision relatively soon or just continue as it is. I would just show you what I'm calling slide two, which is really why we're here. And I'll have to see if Kylie can share that. That one. So this is why we're here. We had the trouble we had did not come upon us last week or the beginning of this year with COVID. It started probably sometime in 16, and we see that we have put together these three bad years, which really is what jeopardizes our project. If we're not making money, how are we going to pay an additional $1.2 million, $100,000 a month on mortgage payments or debt service? So these recommendations come to you as financial recommendations. This is what we can do right now to correct the ship. Doesn't mean they have to be done. And could other things be done? Yep, they could. These things can be done and leave our organization intact, providing and to our community our core services and cleaning up these negative numbers and moving them positive. So Sanctuary is a piece of that. I think it's approximately a third of it. I guess we need we do need your guidance. What should we do?
Okay, the wishes of the commission. We need to have any more discussion on this, or are we ready to make a decision on the sanctuary?
I'm prepared to make a decision on the sanctuary today.
Jordana?
Yep, I'm ready.
Fred?
Yes.
Mary S?
Yes.
Okay, then I'll entertain a motion.
I would like to make the motion that we shutter the sanctuary for the immediate future and direct the leadership to look into a secondary program, a major change that could be provided in the new hospital without inpatient care.
I will second that motion.
It's been moved and seconded. Motion to shutter the sanctuary at this time with directive to pursue other programs in the new hospital. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Could I make that amendment? The one statement you didn't say is without inpatient care.
Okay.
And aye.
All right, the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, there we go. All right, George, then we move on to the clinic.
Yep, we have a slide share on from last, our strategic workshop. It's the consensus next steps. Is what we have been working on. On the first point, I did meet with the leadership of CDCH. Their vision of primary care and care in general in the district, in the valley here at Chelan, is exactly as ours is, to provide the best care, high quality care, affordable for our community. We talked about possibilities of working closer together. What if we did not have a primary care clinic? Would they still be able to provide the care? Would they be able to provide the care? And how could we work closely together to ensure each other's success? You know, it was a very upbeat conversation because we're already very good partners. We talked about, well, you know, if that happened, we probably need to establish a joint ad hoc committee that had board members from both organizations and leaders and work through what could, what would become a legal document that described who is providing what services to whom. And those, if we headed down that pathway, that would be kind of the next steps. That would take a while. That in itself, the process to complete that document, complete that agreement, you know, probably take 3 months. And I might be optimistic on that. But we're really not talking about anything that we aren't pretty much already doing. So there is no hard decisions between the two organizations. It's just actually memorializing them in a document. So that's the, and then the last part of that first point, we talked about urgent care. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of urgent care. However, if we were partnering in this manner where primary care, all primary care was being provided by CDCH, I would look for us to work with that partner and discuss urgent care in Manson or other locations. However, I would always want to pursue urgent care as a fast track in our ED. And we were all in agreement on that. So let me pause then after the first bullet and see if anyone has questions or needs clarifications on that piece.
Well, again, I've read Dr. Waskowitz's request, and I still strongly believe in giving the community a choice and feel that Dr. Waz should have the opportunity as medical director to see if the possibility of making the clinic profitable as it used to be. I just don't want to give up.
Yep, that'll come up in the next point. The first point really just talks about the shutdown and would the services be available in the community? But we will talk about that in upcoming points. We really presented in the session last week three options. One option was we close the clinic and formalize a partnership with CDCH to ensure mutual success. Second option was, as you recall, that we right-size the clinic, we change the clinic to reduce the loss while still providing some service. And the last is, you know, the option and for the commission, and that is to leave it as it is or to do nothing. So then as I continue, I'll go to the second point. At this point, I have Devin, who is our clinic leader. She has a slide, and she is joining us today from home, but I believe I saw her. Are you with us, Devin?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
It's one of the things we always have to get used to with these types of meetings is the delay caused by people unmuting. But yes, we can hear you.
Well, to be fair, I'm on my cell phone, so I have to unmute my phone and I have to unmute the Zoom. So.
All right.
Okay, so let me do a screen share here.
I can do it quick if you want, Devin.
I've already got it ready here. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, so as of right now, I pulled the numbers for our visit from Wednesday because it wasn't, the day wasn't done yesterday. We've got 5,139 visits between the six providers that we have there at the clinic currently. The blue area is showing what our providers and our staff support look like right now. We have a total of 16 staff. With the providers the way that we are and the numbers that were required by CMS, that would put us at almost 16,000 visits that we would need for this year. We also have our orthopedic department down in the RHC commingling space. Because of that physical presence there in the clinic, we have a doctor and a PA down there that adds another 6,300 visits that CMS requires us to have, sitting our total for this year at a little over 22,000. Currently, right-sizing the clinic according to the provider model would put us at two providers in the clinic. That would decrease our staff down to five. I have two options here. Option one is two nurse practitioners. Option two is a physician and a PA. Difference between these two options is that nurse practitioners are an independent license. They don't need any oversight, where a physician assistant does. Together, two nurse practitioners would require 4,200 visits per CMS. Assuming that they meet those visits, this area right here would show what our net loss would be for a year to keep that option going. If they didn't meet the 4,200 visits, we would have a net loss of 189K. Option two is the physician PA. Same thing, they require the total of 6,300 visits per CMS. If they were to meet the 6,300 together, we would have a net loss of 170K. If they did not meet the requirement of 6,300, it would be a net loss of 250K per year. Breaking it down to a visit level, to break even, not make a profit, but break even with the staff and the providers that we have there down here in the blue, two nurse practitioners would need to see five, would have to have 5,000 visits. That's approximately 26 visits a day.
Can't see the blue.
Position, you see it there?
Yes. Now.
Visits for physician and PA to break even would be 7,400, approximately 39 visits per day. Currently, the providers work 4 days a week. So this is based on current 4 day a week numbers.
These required numbers, are they in order to get the full reimbursement, or are they to cover our expenses as we have them now?
If we don't meet the numbers they require, we get an additional penalty. And with the numbers that we have, we figured that that was at about $18 a visit. And this penalty is the $75K right here that would be penalized for not meeting the numbers they require us to meet. So the first number here is if we meet it. The second number is that loss plus the penalty if we weren't to meet the numbers.
And those is that based on our current expenditures?
Yes, so they're based on the 2019 P&L that Vicki did, and then we also based it on our visit numbers average from 19, not 20, because of COVID.
Hey, Mary, this is Viola. To specifically answer your question, the penalty is based on the physician seeing an established number of patients by CMS. It is a CMS penalty, so it is not based on expenditures. It is merely says CMS says if you're running this clinic, your physicians must see this many patients or we will penalize you this dollar amount. They literally take it back from us. It's not, okay, does that make sense? It's not based on expenses. It's a penalty for not seeing enough patients. It's period. That's what it's based on. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay.
And this is George, maybe to clarify too, Devin's examples, one and two, options one and two. And Devin, please verify that I'm clarifying this correctly. The big changes here are in the staff, as you see, current, where it has, you know, the 16 staff. So we go to five staff, and that's significant change in the cost of that operation.
I have a couple
correct.
Of questions.
And
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, that's correct. So the financial piece has to do more with the staff, where the penalty is a direct result of what providers you have and if you meet the numbers that CMS requires us to have.
Is it okay for me to ask a couple questions? So the looking at the right sizing in terms of we have 1,500 patients, which is actually just 3/4 of an FTE. So, but you've listed two FTE, full FTE working this. And in my mind, I think there's still opportunity here to look at right sizing. Maybe you would call it radical, but right sizing to the point where we're closer to what the standard is for that ratio, and looking at again reducing those costs by having partial FTEs working to take care of the patients that we currently have, with some cushion for additional patients who want to access that clinic, and building it back. So I think there's an opportunity to look at this again. In terms of the right sizing, to look at how we might be able to do that. The other question I had was, that was more common. Question I had was, does the bottom line net loss, is that all including the 340B program? Or is that regardless of the 340B program?
I believe it is included. Viola, correct me if I'm wrong.
It doesn't include 340B, but it also doesn't include the overhead that we have to assign there. She's looking at the clinic just all by itself. The Wimpley report gives you the addition of the 340B, but it also gives you the addition of the overhead costs that have to move over there. So it for you have to take both or eliminate both. And in here, we've eliminated both, right, so you could look at it.
Can
someone clinically address, is it possible to do 3/4 of a staff? If you have a physician there, don't you have to have a nurse there for every hour he's there? He can't see, I don't know. I can't answer that question, but I don't know that that's real, that we could do it.
Well, nurse practitioners can practice independently under their license. They obviously, we would not be having them working independently in the sense that they're hired by the hospital, but they can. And then, so I think that's a clarification that needs to be made. And the additional part of that is I know of clinics that are in more remote areas, but are working with less FTE to do, of course, meet the right size for their communities, which are obviously smaller than we are. So my concerns are, this is going to take a little bit more study, but I understand that if you want to include the 340B, then you have to include the overhead. And the figures that we got last week were looking at what was not right size. So I'd like to look at the overhead with the right sizing, and also looking at that 340B program, which is kind of regardless of that, but is dependent on the number of visits and patients that we see. And that was a sizable amount of $582,000. So I think I'd like to look at it a little bit that way. The other the other concerns that I have is, and I'm really looking at very hard at the potential for continuing the primary care clinic in a very minimal, right-sized for our community and what we're experiencing now to get it to at least break even and hopefully do more. But there's a couple of other things if we don't have that, that I want to mention. One is, of course, we lose that 340B program, that $500,000. And then we also, more importantly, we lose control of our referral network to the hospital. And I understand that CDCH, and I know Dave is on this call, we really appreciate that, is that they have been referring, will continue to refer people to our hospital, but we lose the diversification in the community for patient access, and we then also lose control of the referral network for our hospital, which helps our hospital. But I do want to see the elimination of the penalty for not meeting the Medicare standards. And that to me is a management issue. That's not something that a board member I could control, but I, having managed a primary care clinic for 10 years, I know what that takes, and sometimes it's very hard, but we can do it. And then I guess the most important reason for having this access is that it ensures our patients have that local access. And so those are my four reasons: 340B, referral network, reducing the penalty, and ensuring patients have local access is sort of the priorities that I'm looking at, the benefits I'm looking at in having what I call a significant right sizing of the clinic to return it to profitability.
Eric, do you have comments you'd like to make at this time? Eric Volk with Whipley. Eric, are you able to present your point of view? Oh, I guess not. So go ahead, Fred.
Okay. My comment relates to when we're evaluating this stuff, we're looking at direct, all this stuff. We're not looking at value. If the physicians or the clinic refers business to the hospital, maybe for reporting purposes, we have to report that revenue as a hospital, but the value comes from the physician and stuff. And I think that has to be a part of this. We can operate at a loss at one element if we're making it up on another side. And I don't see where we're looking at that.
Hey, this is Eric. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry about that. I just wanted to clear up, what the staffing requirements are in a provider-based rural health clinic for Medicare purposes. And there was some discussion about, how can we staff the clinic cost-effective way to run the provider-based RHC? Because the one idea, is keeping the provider-based RHC number intact, just in case in the future you wanted to expand again or something like that, you would have to go through that process, which can take quite a bit of time.
Okay, Devin, did you have other comments that you wanted to make?
Yes, I'm sorry. So I was asked to base this on right sizing according to the provider model. So I was asked to present this with two providers. Certainly, you could go down to one provider, but I want to point out that eliminates our ability to do same-day appointments and walk-in appointments. I would say at the beginning of a day, we probably have a third, if not half, of our appointments open. And by the end of the day, I would say at least half of those appointments are used by travelers, people that have a PCP at CDCH, people that have a PC at Confluence Health. If we reduce down to one provider, we reduce the amount of time that we're open and available to the public. So I just wanted to point out that we have less than 1,600 established patients, meaning they get their primary care at our clinic, but we still provide care to everybody else.
Okay, what can be done to help recapture patients that are going outside the area?
Jackie, our gal with Jet Marketing, we've been talking to her. That would be something that we'd be getting in our marketing plan.
This is Augustine. Let me just mention on the market end of it, yes, that's part of what can go into the Jet Marketing communication plan moving forward if the decision is to move forward with this. But you got to remember, like Devin is saying, you have travelers who just walk in for a day, an appointment, could be tourists, could be anybody visiting the area. And then a potential patient who wasn't able to get in with their local provider. And the other issue is how many patients out there don't have a provider established. Not sure how many people out there don't. And then getting back that those groups of patients and families to come back, let's say, to Wasteland Clinic is another thing to think about that takes some time for folks to decide, well, I'm going to change my provider again. If folks are traveling Wenatchee or north, there might be some opportunity for them to move over, but it's not going to happen overnight. You got to remember, it takes time. If somebody were to ask you or market to you to change your provider, would you do that? We have to think of how long it's going to take. But we can market, yes.
And I think we have to remember that our provider-based model is based on the population that we have now and where it's been trending. And our population overall number has been decreasing and our aging population has been increasing. So you can look at it from how do we get all of these people back in here, but we also need to remember we only have so many people to bring back in, which is why we kind of worked off the provider-based model.
So I have a question about the 2028 providers you have up there at a total of 5,139. Of those 8 providers, how many of them are functioning fully credentialed and certified? And how long has it taken us to get 2 new providers certified so that they can provide services and are able to get patients in?
So all 6 providers are working right now. We do have Dan working from home managing our COVID screening, triaging, and ordering. He is not seeing patients. He is not fully credentialed, and we've had issues with our third-party vendor since the beginning of the year. So those numbers represent all 6 because all 6 are being paid. However, only 5 of them are seeing patients in the clinic.
So why does it take so long to get the credentialing done?
So I can talk to that. That falls over into the administrative world. And just so that everybody understands, we're talking about enrollment, not medical or clinical credentialing, but enrollment with insurance companies who have established quite a process. We had in 2019, prior to my joining, so I don't know when, but sometime in 2019, contracted for a third party to do that work. That they really weren't doing a great job and it was a failure. And we have just recently changed that contractor and responsibility. But yeah, why does it take so long? Because we did it really badly. That's why. And we're trying to fix that. I believe we have it fixed, but that's the question. As I said on Friday, last week or Thursday or both, there are many things that we, as a hospital, managing and leading a clinic, haven't done well and could do better. And I think we showed a slide last week that showed the clinic's losses have been decreasing most recently. And I do believe that we could get the clinic at pretty much as it exists today to a break-even point, but it would take a couple years. And that's problematic for us, trying to achieve profitability to afford our hospital project. So that's why we're looking at these types of options or solutions to help us. But I wanted to point out, lots of things fell short, and they fell short typically from from leadership, and we are fixing that.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions, but Jamie has wanted to speak to one of the points that were made prior. So if we could maybe give her the floor, please.
Thanks, you guys. This is Jamie. A couple of you have mentioned downstream revenue and referral basis to the hospital, and I ran some data for that for 2020, and so I wanted to be able to provide that to you if it's relevant to your discussion of decision making. I think it's relevant to see the data. I can't give you dollar amounts associated with them because of how this is all grouped together, but I can at least give you some number data. So for 2020 through end of June 30th, 2020, we had 189 total inpatient admissions. That includes obstetrics, inpatient med-surg, telemetry, and nursery. For inpatient admissions, the percentage from our clinic was 18%, and the rest were CDCH. For 2020, I've had two direct admits from clinic, which came from CDCH. They did not come from our clinic. So the relevant number here for inpatient admissions is due to the fact of how much they take call. So if you're on call and admissions come through the ER, you take the admission, whether it's your patient or not. The other data I wanted to add was for outpatient visits, which includes lab, radiology, ambulance, observation accounts, PT, therapy, et cetera. We had 5,191 total. Of that number, 30% came from our clinic. So that includes coming from any of the providers down there. So that's the two physicians, the PAs, and the nurse practitioners. Of course, for the inpatient data, that only includes Dr. Westfall and Dr. Waskowitz. So I just wanted to give you guys that information so you had that. I know it doesn't give you numbers because I can't easily break that out between all the visits, but it gives you the numbers of how much we're actually getting as far as if you're considering referral base being limited. Thank you.
Thanks. So on this provider care right-sizing, I guess, you know, obviously you're going down not primarily, but also in administrative function. So for example, there's no referrals coordinator. I mean, I'm assuming these tasks don't go away. So, I mean, what would then be the plan? Are those tasks that get sucked in by other hospital administrative personnel, or how does that work?
They'd have to be absorbed by the staff that are there.
By the staff that are at the clinic or at the...
That would remain at the clinic. I'm sorry. Yes.
So you really haven't left any administrative staff, though, at the clinic in these two models?
I have not.
So I would like to go back to Phyllis's comments about Dr. Waskowitz's letter and his suggestions and have us consider that as we consider these points also, because I think there's more to it than what we're just seeing. And I think right-sizing is probably the thing we need to do, and how we do that, of course, is going to make a difference. I do not believe that it's to our best interest at this time to close our clinic. And I think that if we were to close, that another entity from outside the area may come in to set up shop as a very possibility. And then we'd really lose referrals. So I just would like to see us explore a little more and talk about possibilities of reducing cost in the clinic and reducing size and marketing what we have to the public in a better way.
I'd like to make comments here, if I remember all of them. George has gone through and said, you know, we have managed it poorly, not necessarily George, it's historical for several years now. We have not marketed effectively. Therefore, it's not doing well, which leads me to we should be improving our act before we penalize something that may be very well to start with if we start doing our jobs properly. He said it could reach profitability in his mind with corrections in 2 years. That's when we have to start making the extra profit to pay the loan off if we go ahead with the construction project, not next month or whatever. We have to be able to see that we can do that, but that's not necessarily has to be done today or right or shortly. I think we've been offered, well, he said three options, do nothing, stay as it is, or close it, or somewhere in between. We've looked at just one in between. And I think we have to look at more of it and see what model may work better. I don't know. I'm not at a point right now I'd even want to consider closing it. I think there's far too many options still available that are beneficial to us. Enough said.
So maybe what I'm hearing you say, or to respond to Fred and maybe other folks feel the same. So leaving it as it is today, is a pretty difficult option. I don't think it's an option we can sustain. Closing it, if you say, okay, that's not an option, then if maybe what the commission wants to do is to look to administration and direct us to right-size the clinic, however that is, over time, but relatively quickly, to in an attempt to get the clinic's bottom line to zero or neutral. We don't need to wrestle so much with the infinite number of options of how to get there. And probably is something you should just direct administration to do. There isn't one option to do that. There aren't three. There's an infinite number of ways, I'm sure, or many, many, many ways. But in the end, if that's something that a number or all of the commissioners will want to pursue, maybe that's the best way to do it, is to say administration, right size it, get it neutral, don't close it, and work to make it successful.
I would agree with that. I think it needs further study, and I think right sizing is the conclusion. We just don't know what that is yet. That's what we want you to help us figure out. What is the right size and when?
And also include those parties at the clinic that's going to be affected to come up with what their ideas are. They may see things that the administration on the outside don't see. They're the ones at the feet on the floor. Let's see what their ideas are to include that.
So is the plan of how many people and what kind of people the commission is thinking that that's something that they're going to decide?
Not the commissioners, no. Include that in the administration's overall evaluation.
I would direct I would like the administration to right size the clinic to become within CMS is giving us guidelines as what their expectations are. It behooves us to actually meet them in order to, not get dinged on our Medicare report. That's a big part of this loss that the clinic, these numbers kind of show. So that right sizing, but then secondarily, I think the commission needs to look at a time frame, because this is not a new problem for us. And granted, today's whatever new normal has an effect, but we at the numbers that we have been carrying the clinic, we can't afford to do that. At break even, absolutely we can. $100,000 loss doesn't hurt me too much either, because that's one of the reasons we have the tax money that we have. But if we can at least meet CMS standards in running the clinic, then we're not doing our job somewhere. So that would be my directive.
Jordana, would you, I appreciate you talking about the time frame. I think we do need a time frame. Would you be ready to make a motion to right size to profitability, and in what timeline?
I think honestly, on the timeline side of it, I would defer to the administration. I mean, I don't think we can. I'm not sure whether 6 months is fair given the conditions that we're in right now, but certainly by, you know, and that's the end of our calendar year. So it would have an effect on our Medicare report this year as well. But, so I guess I would prefer guidance from the administration. Obviously, you know, to me, a year is too long to, you know, I think that there should be able to make changes, significant changes, well before a year. But we have to make the commitment that we're going to, you know, that we're going to back that up, that we're going to, you know, that we're going to do the marketing. To truly give them the option of, you know, obviously we've got new doctor. When we have new doctors in town, how are we promoting that they're here and that what their services are? So we have to make that commitment as well.
George, how long do you think it would take for administration to get together a couple options for the commissioners to review?
Well, that's my question, because I'm hearing several things or maybe not understanding clearly. What I'd love for you to do, what I wish you would do, is say, George, you need to right size it. Go ahead and do that and report back to us. And I say that because, you know, let me give you another example. Our therapy clinic, we manage the staff there all the time. How many providers we have, how many we don't. The same is true on MedSurg and every other department. My question would be, why is this different? We can do that. We just chose not to do that because of all the options here. And we wanted your direction. But that would be my suggestion to you, my recommendation. And then we report, obviously, every month in board meetings on, you know, what the progress and success is.
I would like to see us direct the administration to right size this and make it profitable while you're at it.
Mary, is that a motion that you're making?
If it needs to be, it can be. Yes, yeah, I'd like to make this a motion that we direct the administration to right size the clinic and keep us appraised of it as we go along. On a monthly basis is fine or whatever. It doesn't have to be part of a motion, obviously, but that's my motion.
I'll second that.
I have a point to make in the discussion. For me, having the clinic continue to not be profitable 6, 7, 8 months from now is going to seriously affect other things, such as faith in the new hospital building being built, because we were told that it was contingent on getting this profitable. So I think that the clock is ticking, and my expectations are that we would see significant progress within 6 months. And that, again, means probably significant actions on the part of administration to make this right-sized as soon as possible. I will be looking at the financials very critically from month to month around this, and be asking for justification as to why they haven't changed if they haven't. But that being said, I know that George is intent on getting this moving as quickly as he can. And so I'm going to put my faith in that. And
I have to further that question. I guess, obviously we can see the financials of the entire entity. We generally speaking, don't see separate financial information for the clinic. So in order to be able to make these decisions, we have to see that more regularly. Is that a viable request?
This is George. I believe we can develop an indicator with past data on the clinic's performance and show how it is changing into the future or as we move forward. We can easily do that.
I'd like to also add to the conversation here. We still don't know that the with changing the, well, we haven't made that decision either, but with not having sanctuary, that will reduce our expenses down the road, and it will bring us probably less of a footprint in our new building when we get to that piece of the discussion. That will reduce the cost of our new facility. I am assuming that will reduce the cost of our new facility. And so we also need to look at what is real on the cost of that facility once we get there. So there's some other options or some other areas that need to be considered when we look at the 2 years down the road. What will we need? How much will we need? And what will we be making or losing in that regard? So I think there are more factors, and there's always factors in when we make one decision, there's always a sort of a domino effect, it seems like. But those are other things that we have to consider, is the differences in the cost of our new facility as we move forward.
So Jamie has been begging to make a comment in regards to our discussion.
Thank you. Do we need to complete the motion, Phyllis?
Yes.
I'm wondering if her discussion has part of our
that discussion. Was smart. Is Jamie's comments going to have an impact on the motion?
It can potentially. I'd like to just present it, and I apologize for following out of order if that's what I'm doing. Again, I'm not trying to. I understand that at the losses potentially that the clinic takes, that seems acceptable financially. What I'd like to add in is, relative to the state of our finances overall, we lose out on potentially getting new equipment and upgraded equipment in our hospital at this time, not future, because we're willing to take a loss somewhere else, and we struggle to work through with the outdated equipment we've had. Also, relative to the idea that we have not been able to make capital purchases as needed to keep things ongoing. That's all I wanted to add. And again, thank you for letting me interject.
Okay, there is a motion on the floor. If there's no more discussion.
I'd like to make one more comment. Can I make another comment?
Go ahead.
The motion states that administration will make the decision on right-sizing the clinic. I would say, as long as that right-sizing is not closing it, that should come back to the commission.
Well, and I agree that before final decision is made, that the right sizing plan be presented to the commissioners for approval.
I hope so.
Oh, I don't understand that. Let me restate it to make sure that I understand your motion and what you would be asking administration. So you ask administration to come up with a plan. To right-size the clinic. And the plan could look something like an option that you looked at, that Devin presented. And then you would approve that.
That is not my motion. That was not my motion, Fred. You're changing my motion. The motion on the floor is to have the administration right-size the clinic. It has nothing to do with closing it or anything. We're not asking them to close it. We're asking them to right size the clinic and make it profitable.
But right sizing could mean closing it.
We've all agreed that right sizing is not closing.
Okay, then what I'm looking for is the plan.
Well, the administration is being charged with doing that.
Yeah, I agree with Mary.
They're not asking us to micromanage that plan.
Yeah, I would agree with Mary on that. We don't need them to tell us another plan. We know that there are a bajillion of them. He needs to make a decision. Let him do it.
Okay, so we're stepping out of the clinic operations totally.
We're not operating the clinic. The administration.
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
Based on the motion.
I'm sorry. All right, discussion. There's a motion on the floor to address that management right-size the clinic. It's been moved and seconded. So let's call for a vote. All in favor of directing management to right-size the clinic?
Phyllis, it's administration, not the management.
I'm sorry, administration. I'm sorry on that one. The administration be directed to right-size the clinic. It's been seconded. We've had discussion. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I'm abstaining.
Okay.
And the motion, Mary, the motion included right size to profitability.
Yes, it did.
So that wording needs to be in there?
It was in there originally, okay.
Yes. All right. Yes. I want to maintain that wording.
Right size the clinic to profitability.
Correct.
Okay. Again, let us do a revote. All in favor of the right size to profitability?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. George or Fred, are you still abstaining?
Yes.
Okay. All right, then. Do you have any further questions for us, George?
No, I think that's clear. Thank you.
All right. What do we got next on the agenda? I lost it.
Can we go home now?
There's nothing, Phyllis. It's
that's it? Just those two things?
Correct.
Yeah, so what we will then add or have a discussion about adding to the agenda for Tuesday's regular meeting is with these decisions made, with this guidance made, on Tuesday we should have a discussion about restarting the hospital project.
Correct.
Yes.
And so so that Dick and our design team know what's going on, we'll be within hours, literally, of their hopeful guideline.
Okay, we'll just make sure that we have plenty of time within our meeting on Tuesday to have a good discussion on that.
Yeah, but prepare yourselves for a meeting. We have our audit will be presented. Those just add time to everything else, and find a real comfy chair.
Okay, is there anything else to come before the meeting? Any discussions more regarding the sanctuary and the clinic? If not, this meeting is adjourned.